I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cincinnati, Ohio. Come along and join Rick Walls, Executive Director at the Cincinnati Reds Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. Wall leads us on a tour at the Hall of Fame, located at the Great American Ballpark in the heart of downtown Cincinnati. Rick shares cool insights about the team's greatest home run hitters and signature moments in the team's history, dating back to 1869 when the team first went up to bat. The Reds, originally dubbed the Red Stockings, is America's oldest ball club. A time before the advent of baseball gloves, the Red Stockings finished their first season undefeated way back in 1869, and they continue to slug away. Rick Walls.
We are right next to Great American Ballpark in downtown Cincinnati, home of the Cincinnati Reds. Walking through a 16,000 square foot museum that traces the history of Reds baseball all the way back to 1869 when the Reds were the first professional team.
In America.
We have just walked into the long ball exhibit, which highlights the iconic and unforgettable home runs in Reds history. So whether it's the artifacts, the highlights, the today's technology, the statistics that go into what creates a home run, we've got it all for everyone here.
And it's right adjacent to the stadium itself, right?
Yeah, a lot of people think that you're only open during the game, but this museum is open year-round and has a variety of activities and fun events for people of all ages to enjoy.
What would be an example of an activity?
We bring back Reds alumni, former players who have either been a Hall of Famer or might have been a one-hit wonder, but they come back to the museum and participate in lots of speaking events and just have a great time here.
Again, mind-blowing, the first organized official baseball team in America.
The first professional baseball team, 1869.
And so then they had to go out and find somebody to play.
Well, they found some teams that had paid some of their players, and that's the way baseball was before 1869, but that 69 team is recognized the team that made baseball famous.
Going back further, it's a little amorphous, Doubleday and whatnot, you know, who started baseball. But it's a fact they were playing ball in the Civil War, right?
Yeah, they were. And, you know, baseball doesn't have that peach basket moment that you think about with James Naismith, but it evolved and grew out of cricket and round ball and town ball, and then baseball evolved, and some of the rules have stayed the same.
And the derivation of the name the Cincinnati Reds is from their stockings?
Yeah, well, the Red Stockings, why they named the team, they wore the crimson hose back in 1869, and that's why the team came, and then the Reds, exactly as you said, a derivation.
And same thing like White Sox, that they were the White Stockings?
Makes a lot of sense, right? You would wear the name would be the color of your uniform.
It's a mammoth facility.
Yeah, you're in the main gallery that changes every year. So we're looking at over 250 artifacts, current players and past players. And right behind us on this wall, and I know not everybody can see this, of course, but I have game-used bats from the top 50 home run hitters in Reds history. Talking about guys like Johnny Bench, Ted Klazuski, Ken Griffey Jr., Brandon Phillips, Wally Post. If you want to go back in time a little bit, I even have Ernie Lombardi, who is in the National Hall of Fame.
They say with most museum collections that what you see is less than 10 or 5%.
Very true here as well. Yes, most of our archives are in the basement of the ballpark right now, waiting to be brought out and seeing the light of day. So we do rotate quite often.
Is this a free-ranging tour or?
We don't want to control it too much. We do guided tours, but often we'll let them meander at their own pace and their own interest level because we have geared this toward all ages. And if you're a Reds fan, you'll love it. If you're just a casual baseball enthusiast, you're going to love it too.
Pete Rose,
obviously, from Cincinnati. He's probably one of the most iconic figures ever to wear a Reds uniform. And we see Pete often. Pete was inducted into our Hall of Fame in 2016. There's a statue outside the ballpark in his honor, and his number's retired.
What a legend.
Yeah, he's definitely a legend, especially here in Cincinnati. We have a theater that shows different films throughout the museum. This theater will have Reds history encapsulated. This is really about last year's baseball team. Actually, the Reds were a pretty exciting team to watch, and that's why we wanted to highlight that
Last week you were exciting.
I know. I wish we'd win more games right now, but we're coming back, right? We're getting good, and we've got some exciting players on the team, a youthful energy that we just think this team is about ready to take off.
So it's all about recruitment, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, when you think about player development, you get the right players and you develop them. You bring them up what we call the Reds way in the system, and they're all working together. You know, the culture that the Reds are trying to establish, I think, is going the right direction.
Talk to us about farm teams, AA, AAA.
Well, the Reds have had a long history of farm clubs. Even going back to, we had the first farm club, I believe, close to it in Cuba. The Reds' connection to Latin America was important back in the early 1900s, but now we're in Dayton with our low A club. We've got, or our high A club now. We were in Louisville with our AAA club, and we're down in Daytona.
What are their names?
Well, we got the Tortugas in Daytona. We've got the Louisville Bats, and we got the Dayton Dragon.
So what do we have here?
So again, looking at some more game-used jerseys and bats, you'll find the first bat that Spencer Steer, a left fielder for the Reds, used last year to hit his first home run, as well as the helmet. Jersey by Dave Parker, the great Red and Pittsburgh Pirate, and also Brett Boone here hanging on the wall.
You have a loyal fan base.
I think that's true. You know, it's not a busy day at the ballpark, and weekends are going to be busier, but these fans seem to stick with this club. It's been since 1990 that we won a World Series, but they all remember the 1970s, and that was the legendary teams, the Big Red Machine.
Well, it's like the Mets. I mean,
I know. You don't always have a lot of championships. I mean, the Yankees have 27. The Cardinals have 11. The Reds have 5. And it doesn't matter whether it's 5 or 6 or 7. I think about keeping the fans engaged, and the Reds do such a good job of doing that.
And the fans here, they're eternal optimists, aren't they?
They are. And the hope of every opening day is that we're in first place, and you never know what's going to happen. And today's game, you just make the playoffs. You try to get in.
Who are they playing today?
Today we got the San Diego Padres in town, and coming in with the Reds just came back from West Coast trip. They got the Padres and now the Dodgers after that.
So what are some of the other highlights?
Most of the museum is on the third floor. We're on the first floor right now, and we're walking down an area called Pursuit of a Dream, which highlights the history of Negro Leagues baseball.
You had a Negro Leagues team here.
We did, back in the 1930s, the Cincinnati Tigers. On the wall left and right are the faces. We tell the story about them playing at Crosley Field, where the Reds played. So when the Reds were not there, this team played there. They wore the same uniforms the Reds did at that time.
Oh, interesting.
And when the Reds were done with the uniforms, they ended up giving them to that team. We've got replica jerseys of the Negro League teams from all over the Midwest. And we talk a lot about integration in baseball. Jackie Robinson, 1947. And the Reds' Jackie Robinson was Chuck Harmon, who broke the color barrier here in 1954.
Wow. So he was right behind.
Yeah, it took a while. You know, integration baseball, kind of like night baseball, did not happen overnight. The Reds had the first night game in 1935, and then it took 7-8 years before other teams adopted it.
These are really cool.
These are the Great Eight and Sparky Anderson from the Big Red Machine teams of 1975 and 76. So the starting lineup, whether it's George Foster in left, Cesar Geronimo in center, Ken Griffey over in right field, Pete Rose at third, Concepcion, it's shortstop, Joe Morgan at second, Tony Perez at first, Johnny Bench behind the plate, and the good old Sparky.
What's out here in this green space?
Two things I point out. One is the marker on the turf. We are in the footprint of Riverfront Stadium, so we're standing in left field.
When was Riverfront built? You said
1970. So
yet it was antiquated.
It was the dual-purpose park. The Bengals played here and the Reds played here. And that spot that we're looking at with the granite markers where Pete Rose's record-breaking single landed that broke Ty Cobb's record, hit 41-92.
Wow.
And behind it, the pavilion is a tribute to the 1869 Red Stockings, that first team.
Are there any archival photos from that period of time?
We have a couple of cards, baseball cards. We have two cards from the 69 team in 1869, and they're on display upstairs.
Cool.
So as we walk up the stairs, again, we call this Pursuit of a Dream. We look to the right and we see 4,256 baseballs representing each of Pete Rose's hits in his career. The subject there is about determination, hard work, and commitment to a particular goal, and Pete certainly had that. And then on the walls left and right, you'll find important Reds players in history. These is highlighting some of the African-Americans that are in the Reds Hall of Fame. And on the other side, we highlight what the Reds are doing in the community to support youth baseball and softball.
How many square feet again?
16,000 square feet. And not every team has a Hall of Fame. Benchmarked to other places, we think of ourselves as the big museum in baseball. So we work with all the other teams and try to promote them having Halls of Fame themselves.
Great view here.
It's one of the best views you can find, looking out into the fan zone.
The Ohio River?
At the Ohio River, the Licking River coming out of Kentucky meets the Ohio here. And the Roebling Suspension Bridge, which has been here since the 1860s, was the prototype for the Brooklyn Bridge in New York.
Wow. And it looks, it reads contemporary.
It does.
It holds up well.
It does. And they had to paint it not too long ago, but you might notice that the architecture of the apartment building in the back with the curve, it's called the Ascent, has the same curvature as the suspension bridge.
So that mimics.
Yep. Very. I think it was all planned. They did a good job of that. So we are on the third floor now, and I like to think of the Reds as one of the most innovative teams in baseball history. We talked about the first professional team, but there are a lot of firsts in our history. And we talked about the first professional night game was May 24th, 1935. We'll celebrate the 89th anniversary of that this year. And then first professional team, first team to play on an all-AstroTurf field. You think of the Houston Astrodome. Mm-hmm. But the Reds were the first to have turf base paths, so that was the difference between us and Houston. First team to fly to an away game on an airplane. I think that was risky back in 1934.
Yeah. What's this here now? 1939.
First. Yeah. Again, the Reds were in that first game, and I think this had a lot to do with Pal Crosley, who was the owner of the Reds. You've heard of Crosley Automobiles, Crosley Radios. That's essentially why you see them with the lighting, too. They were innovative. They had to find ways to make money, to save money, and to create fan interest. And the Reds have always been like that.
Still an issue today in professional baseball, isn't it? Even though the players make multi-millions, it's still a struggle for the owner.
Yeah, you know, every team, depending on your market size, right, your fan base, and everything you can do to drive interest, it's all about engagement and connection with your fans. And if you can keep that up, you can keep your fan base and keep some of that revenue coming in. But it's really about how the fans feel about it. And it's got to be a community thing. We see Cincinnati baseball as a bonding influence. It really rallies everybody together. So when everything else is going bad, everybody can count on the Reds playing baseball.
What's interesting, I was with a Detroit Tigers guy like you, and he said baseball is the most socially driven game of all.
Yeah, it definitely is. I love it because the pace of play allows you to sit in the stands with family and friends. You can turn away for a second, not miss anything. You could even go to the concession stand if you want to, but you're allowed to have a conversation, and I think that's the beauty of the game.
Well, and it's again, I mean, they've changed the timing, but that ball in play, there are a lot of times when there's no ball in play.
Yeah, if you add up the time that there's actual action going on. But you know, as a baseball person, baseball is something is going on all the time. The ball may not be in play, but we've got defensive moves. We've got all kinds of adjustments.
Guys some trying thinking. To steal bases.
It's a game of chess.
Yeah.
So we're in the then and now, and I mentioned earlier about this wonderful baseball card from 1869.
That's a real one.
That is it. That is one of very few in existence. So that's your 1869 all-professional team. By the way, they won 57 games and lost zero.
Wow.
And traveled from coast to coast all the way to California.
You need to bring them back.
I know. We could use them right now.
So what do you have here? This is crazy.
Then and now is about how the game has changed from the fans' perspective. So we don't see the programs and scorecards and giveaways the same way that they used to be. So ticket stubs have kind of gone by the wayside because it's now the electronic ticket. So the collector items, the things that connected you with the game, the physical, tangible things just aren't quite there anymore.
What's a hot collectible today?
Well, baseball cards have come back strong, which is interesting because we have a nice collection of those. But really, it's the bobbleheads, the Funko Pops, the big giveaways. You can walk into the ballpark and leave with something pretty cool. And if someone gets a bobblehead made of them, they think it's a great honor.
So again, we're talking about what we see on display in the 16,000 feet is 10% or less.
Mm-hmm.
Of what you have.
Yeah.
Where's the rest of the stadium?
Can't tell you. No, it's down. It is in the bowels of the stadium.
Okay,
we have a really cool archive room. And actually, below our cases, we've strategically placed a lot of archives where we can pull from if we need them for special events and special tours.
So it follows you do some rotation to keep it fresh.
Yep.
So if I came back 9 months or a year from now, it'd be semi-new experience.
You see a lot of different things. Many things you see on here are donated to the Hall of Fame, and some are even loaned to us. So you will get this constant rotation. The fans want the things that they had, because teams didn't collect things. The Reds didn't collect things. The fans got it. So we had to bring it all back home to showcase it.
What do we have here?
We're in a timeline, and we're back in 1876 when the Reds joined the National League. So we're starting with some of the oldest artifacts we have, a sweater worn by Dick Hoblitzel. He's actually wearing it in that photo. there's nothing more exciting than matching an artifact with the photo and kind of giving it that
context.
You bet. And that just shows you the period of time that you're in. I just love that stuff. Seeing the size of the bats, how they've changed over the years. This is a Heine Grow, almost looks like a bottle bat.
Louisville Slugger's been making them forever.
They have been. They have been making them forever. And whether it's Louisville Slugger, you see some Adirondack bats still that have been around, and Rawlings came in later. Some pretty cool stuff.
And what's this 1919 pennant?
Yeah, you know, the Reds won their first World Series in 1919. If you recall, that was the Black Sox scandal. So the whole story about the Chicago White Sox throwing the World Series, the Reds ended up winning. We would have won anyway. That's the story. I don't care who throws it. But we've got some neat artifacts from fans that would do things. This is actually from the Business Men's Club Company of Cincinnati, and it's signed by all the players. So you'll find a lot of game-used artifacts, a lot of jerseys, uniforms, but as well as signatures throughout. Just walked by Johnny Vandermeer, and I point him out because as you come in, you'll see Johnny Vandermeer, the first pitcher, the only pitcher ever to throw back-to-back no-hitters. Imagine that, 1938. Ted Klazuski, who cuts off the sleeves on his uniform because his bulging biceps were just too big for the cotton flannel at the time. Johnny Bench, maybe the greatest catcher of all time, and then Barry Larkin on the end. What you leave here with is understanding that we're celebrating greatness, preserving history of an important part of American society, and providing inspiration. It's hard, but you can do it with young kids, and you can do it with adults. It's possible.
What you're saying is the little kids love this just as much as Grandpa.
What I like is the connecting of the generations. So when Grandpa, Dad, and grandkid come in, whether it's boys or girls, they come in and they can relate. They can say, I like the second baseman for the Reds right now, Jonathan India. And this person, well, what about Joe Morgan? And then we're talking about Tommy Helms, Roy McMillan. So you can all talk about the same thing, and I think that brings us together.
We have audio in the background. Are there a couple video rooms in addition?
Yeah, one of the things to bring it, and again, to get young kids interested, we have instructional videos from all of our players that participate in spring training. They'll tell you how to hit, field, and pitch.
Your players come here sometimes?
We get the players through. I had Spencer Steer here not too long ago, and every player that's drafted by the Reds gets a tour from me in the Hall of Fame, which is a lot of fun.
I bet.
And
they,
you talk about someone that doesn't know anything about Reds history. Great college players come through, and now we're trying to indoctrinate them and let them know they're part of something special now.
And here you have models of the old stadium.
Yeah, we're looking at the Palace of the Fans, home of the Reds from 1902 to 1911. And it's a beautiful ballpark, followed by Crosley Field model. These are scale models, almost to size, beautiful renditions of what the parks were like back then. And
Crosley funded it?
Well, Crosley took over Redland Field when he bought the club in 1934, and it was his business partner, Larry McPhail, and him who decided, hey, we need to rename the ballpark in your name. Since you own radio stations, automobiles, you have all kinds of business products, and it made a lot of sense from a marketing perspective.
A couple more highlights.
So as we walk down the timeline, on the left and right, you'll find jerseys representing all the different styles of our uniform. And there have been over 30 different styles. And whether it's pinstripes or sleeveless jerseys or the polyester or the flannel, it gives you a great look at what baseball history was like. Now I'm looking over here at our baseball card archive. Over 6,000 baseball cards on display, been digitized front and back. So if you were a collector or, you know, you just have a favorite player, his card's over here. And the interactive exhibit allows you to make your own card too. So you get to step up to our kiosk and interact with it and have your card emailed to you.
I looked at Dallas Cowboys and the historian was talking about how color television, the advent, was a game changer for the game in a lot of ways.
For us, it was radio was the first thing, made people Reds fans, and then second, it was TV. That's why they think of Atlanta Braves, how they have such a following in Chicago. TBS and WGN both helped broadcast that. Here it was 700 WLW with 50,000 watts of AM power, and it broadcast overseas even during the war. So people became Reds fans everywhere. So the space we're in now is the Marty Brenneman and Joe Nuxall Broadcasting Exhibit, highlighting that grand history.
So that was it right there. There's the depth.
Fans can step up to the TV broadcast booth or the radio booth, record calling a great play, and then also have that emailed to them. So you get to take a piece of history home with you.
And that's all part of entry.
Yeah, this is the place that you can come for 30 minutes, or for 4 hours, or become a member and come back over and over again. Not just because we change things, because you'll miss something. I swear, I walk through here every day and see something new. Fans will find the touch screens throughout the museum that they're able to tap into and see over 20 hours of different video footage. But the space I'm walking into now is the Hall of Fame. So we went through the museum, most of it. Now we're walking into the ultimate goal of every single player. There are 93 inductees in the Reds Hall of Fame.
Wow.
First class was 1958. So we've been catching up a little bit, have inductions every 2 years, and I have never seen a display like we just created 4 years ago when we did the renovation of the museum.
What makes it distinctive?
Distinctive that every plaque of each Hall of Famer will light up when you, as the user, interact with the touchscreen monitors.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So it's a very reverential feel as you walk in. The music, what I'm hearing in the background, the kiosks in the center of the room that allow me to pick any one of our 93 Hall of Famers and play a video. So if I want to look up a shortstop like Barry Larkin, the user touches the button and then Barry's bio shows up, and then they're able to bring the entire room to life. So the video you're about to see is about a minute long. Barry's plaque lighting up over here. So 93 different videos. So it's a good chance when you go to a museum, often you'll just see a bronze plaque. And what we noticed, fans weren't reading the plaques as much. We wanted them to spend more time, learn more about the players. They leave here feeling more like they know the Hall of Famers better. All the bronze plaques date back to 1958. To the current year, we've got room for about 10 more years, and then we're going to have to make some more space.
That's so cool.
We got one more room after this, by the way.
In baseball history to hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in a season.
So we talked about individual players' ultimate goal to be a Hall of Famer, but really, if you are into team sports, winning a World Series is what it's all about. And the Reds have won 5 World Championships, and we're about to walk into the Williams Family Champions Gallery and see the World Series trophies, watch the videos of the great teams, really put some artifacts into perspective here.
Are those real trophies? Or?
We have trophies were made in 1967, I think, or 68 for the first year. So the Reds have won in 1919, 1940, 75, 76, and 90. So 75, 76, and 90 are the real trophies. The other two are what we call tribute trophies. There were no trophies back then. You get pins and pendants and rings and things like that, but no trophies. So one thing that I point out here that I think I highlight, there's two things. We have a game-used bat from Shoeless Joe Jackson that he used back, not in the 1919 World Series, but around that. And then in the trophy over here, which is the tribute to the 1919, is the last out ball from the World Series. So
the actual ball.
That is a Shoeless Joe Jackson hit that ground ball to Maury Rath, the second baseman, who threw on to Jake Daubert at first and changed baseball forever as the Reds win that World Series. And then a year later, they're accused of throwing it. So it certainly changed the game a lot, the way we think about it now. And certainly that's how outlawing gambling became a big issue at that time.
That was an issue with Pete Rose, wasn't it?
It is. It has been, right? So he's on baseball's ineligible list. So the National Baseball Hall of Fame has a rule that if you're on that list, you're not eligible. So he still remains.
Any chance of changing that, overriding it?
I don't know what the Hall of Fame will do at that point. I mean, I know there's a lot of people involved in that process. I'm sure they review it. There are a lot of different players that have different things that are keeping them from getting votes.
And Bench, he was a classic.
Now, this guy, Johnny Bench, is probably synonymous with Reds baseball as just about anybody. And I get to see Johnny a lot because he comes back for reunions. But you talk about what we call the greatest catcher of all time, JB, number 5, he's the guy. I think Johnny was born in 47.
He's still sharp.
Yeah, and he is. He's great. I mean, he does a lot of speaking engagements with us, is always around. He's really the rally guy that pulls that 75-76 team together. So we'll have a reunion with him next year because we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 75 World Championship.
So we're at the end of the line here?
We're close to it. I like to think that people can always double back, but this museum, like all of them, empties into the gift shop. So if anybody wants to purchase a great item from the Reds, they can do it at the end of their visit.
Rough guess, how long does an average visitor spend in here?
45-minute trip. So I encourage people to come in before the game. We're open for a while into the game. If it's a weekend, we're even open after the game. But again, we're open year-round. So even if there's no game going on, learn a little about Reds baseball and stop in.
So if they came in before the game, they could come back after?
Ticket's good for all day. It's very affordable. Kids 12 and under are free. Adults are only $12. Military, active, and veteran are always free. So we try to make it affordable because we have something that everybody should see.
I love it. This has been great. To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
Well, our website, where all of our information is, redsmuseum.org. And this is Rick Walls, Executive Director of the Reds Hall of Fame and Museum.
And you never get tired of it, do you?
I love it. I have the best job in the world.
And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Cincinnati, Ohio. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.